All right. Hey, guys. It's Reason to Smile Today podcast. Hope you guys are all doing well and preparing for the holidays. Today's a really exciting day because I have a special guest. I have an old friend, someone I've known from when I was just young many, many, many years ago, here to talk to us about an important topic. And we're going to talk all things life insurance. So many of you guys may be wondering why life insurance. That seems kind of gloomy, seems kind of sad. Why on Reason to Smile are we talking about that? Well, if you remember on the Thanksgiving podcast, one of the things we were talking about are important lessons we learned from my mom and dad dying. And my younger brother, Jamie, was very explicit in that one of his huge life lessons was the importance of leaving something for your children, either in the terms of money or at the very least not being a financial burden on them and having them pay for your funeral. So that was one of the topics he brought up. And I thought that'd be a great segue into something for the holidays, myself included. I have lots of questions. I'm hoping to learn a lot today about life insurance. And it's kind of been a very important topic that a lot of people are scared to talk about because it deals with death. And no one really likes to think about their own mortality, and it can be scary. But today we're going to talk about it, so it's not so scary. So I'm going to turn it over and let you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you.
Yes, thank you so much, Jen. Thank you so much for having me. This is something that I'm really, really passionate about. But just to give you all just a little bit of background about myself, I am a licensed life insurance agent. I'm licensed in 7 states. So we have Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Texas, Georgia, and Maryland. And I also am a real estate agent here in Delaware. By the way, I'm in Delaware. And I'm also a travel agent and a business consultant. So one of my primary passions is life insurance. And you did such a great job at really explaining just at a high level why we need it or what some families go through when they don't have it. So I'm really excited to just, you know, really get into it and talk about some of the things I'm most passionate about and what may be important to people as they really decide, first of all, why they need it and also what type they should have.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So we'll give you a little bit of plug at the end. Those you guys are in those states that she mentioned. Big up 302. Those of you guys who don't know, that's where I'm from, even though I live in Georgia. So that way people can get in contact with you if they have further questions or definitely want to dig in further. So just to kind of kick us off and talk about why life insurance. Why do people need this?
Well, people need life insurance because as we all seen, we were just in a really difficult time over this last year and a half. I know in our lifetime, you know, we're about the same age, Jen. We've never seen anything like we've really just seen with this pandemic. A lot of people passed away. It was obviously unexpected, you know, and a lot of people didn't have coverage. They didn't have life insurance. They also didn't have money. So if you don't have money, if you don't have enough saved up to handle final expenses at the very least, then what happens is your family is left with that burden to now try to pull together funds to at least have a funeral of some sort, because most people do want to have a funeral. Aside from that, you also need to have insurance or have something to leave behind if you have children. So if you have small children and something happens to you today or tomorrow, what kind of life do you want your children to live in your absence? I know for me, when I made the decision to get life insurance many years ago, the only thing I thought about was at the time I was a single mom. So if something happens to me, what kind of life do my kids live after that? Like, how's my mom or their grandmother, whoever, going to take care of them for the rest of their life? They need funds for that. And that's what that's for. So that's the main reason for me why life insurance is important. But it's really just dependent on the person and what their goals are for their family.
And I think that's important because, like I said, both my parents have passed away. Neither one of them had life insurance, and they passed away within 11 months of each other. So the first thing that happens was, you know, we were thinking about, you know, how to say farewell to them. And you're, to your point, people do want some sort of farewell. You can do it, you know, on the cheaper side to the more expensive side, but even the cheaper side is expensive. And I don't think people mm-hmm. think of that. Like, even if you want to cremate and just do a small service, you're going to spend at least probably $5,000. And if you don't have that around, you know, that's when you have to do other things and you have to put something on your credit card or tap into your savings. Or as we all know today, and this is no knock on it because my family did it too. That's why you see a plethora of GoFundMe accounts, right? People are needing help to pay for those final expenses. And no one wants to be a burden as they're going out the door, right? That's no one's intention. So although this is a topic that can scare you, you really have to just kind of man up, put on your big girl pants and face the facts, because we're all going to die one day. And that's just the fact of it. And to your point, let's have means that someone can bury us. And if we have someone that we need to take care of, whether we're taking care of a family member, a parent, our children, we have to think about those people. And so as much as we don't want to, we really got to get down and get this taken care of. And I think what a lot of people kind of rely on, and I myself am in the same bucket, is I'm working, right? So through my employer, I have life insurance. And so I'm like, okay, well, everything is great. But can you talk about why having insurance outside of your job is so important?
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite things to say. So first, I also wanted to just send you my condolences just on, you know, losing both of your parents. I know that was a lot for you to deal with, you know, let alone just financially, but emotionally. So I definitely send my condolences there. And the reason why it's important to have life insurance outside of your job is because we are not in an era anymore where you literally work at a job for 40 or 50 years. Some people do, most people don't. I know I don't, you know, I haven't. So when you leave your job, you also leave without insurance, because they're giving you that insurance while you're working at that company. Now, there are some companies that will offer you the ability to get like your own independent policy when you leave, but usually it's very expensive and it also doesn't always cover your whole family. So I know when I had insurance at my last job, it only covered me. It didn't cover my kids, my husband, anybody. So what about them? What if something happens to them? So the reason why it's really important to have your own independent policy is because if anything should happen, you don't have a job or a company determining if your family's going to be okay. I use myself as an example. I worked in corporate America for over 20 years, and I didn't think that I would be retired from working for a company at 39 years old. But well, I was actually 38, but I am. And now I don't work for a company. So imagine if I never got that insurance policy 9 years ago, I would have had to figure out now how to get insurance, not how to get it, but I would have now had to get insurance at 38 years old, as opposed to when I was 29. So, you know, it would be a little bit more expensive. So I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit later, but also the younger that we are and we get a policy, the cheaper it is. And then the longer we have coverage and can put some other things in place.
Got it. So what are, to kind of just educate the people listening, what are the different types of life insurance you can get? And can you talk a little bit about the pros and cons of each of them?
Absolutely. So the main two types of life insurance that you'll hear about is whole life and term life. So I'm just going to talk about whole life on a general basis, because there are so many variables to whole life insurance. You have whole life, you have universal life, you have variable life. So there's all these different types of life insurance policies, but the main thing that they all carry is insurance with a cash value account attached to it. That's the fundamental similarity between those different types of whole life policies as opposed to term. So first, I'm going to talk about whole life. So whole life is a type of policy where you pay a premium every month. And when I say premium, it's the amount that you pay for your insurance. You can pay a premium monthly, quarterly, annually, but you're going to pay this premium. So with whole life, you're generally going to pay a higher premium because they're giving you a certain amount of life insurance, which we call a death benefit. So when we say death benefit, that means that if something happens to you and you pass away, then your beneficiary will receive the death benefit. So you have a certain amount in your death benefit. And then the other portion, which is a very, very small portion, goes to this cash value account. Now, so let me talk about the pros, I guess, if I can pick one. So the pros for some people are that they can pay one amount for basically two things. So I can pay one amount and I can have insurance and I can also have cash. The other thing that most people see as a pro is that they can borrow from this cash value account whenever they need to. But in reality, they're actually cons. So when you purchase a whole life policy, number one, you're going to pay more for the insurance for the amount that you get than you would for a term life policy. Number two, only a small portion of that cash, of that premium that you pay goes to the cash value, which means that it's going to take a long time for that account to have any type of real value. Next, when they do, like, there's two different kinds of accounts. They'll give you a guaranteed rate of return. So when you get a guaranteed rate of return, usually that's going to be around 1 to 2%. So, we all can do simple math. 1 to 2% is not a lot in interest. And then for the accounts that have a non-guaranteed rate of return, but we know what non-guarantees means is that you could possibly get this amount, but it's not guaranteed. So usually it's a little bit higher on what they non-guarantee you, but either way, it's still not a high number. So with term insurance, term does expire. So you have insurance for a certain number of years. So if you have a 35-year term, then that means that after 35 years, you will no longer have insurance coverage. You will have to renew depending on how old you are. Or if, this isn't really a plug, but it's just saying if you're like working with me, then 9 times out of 10, by the time you get to the end of that policy, you won't need to renew it because you'll be able to self-insure yourself. Because what you can do with the term policy is get a policy which is giving you insurance, and you can get much more insurance coverage for a lesser amount. And then you can take another amount of money, whatever that is, whatever works for your budget, and then you can invest it. So if you invest it, then by the time that 35 years is up with all that compound interest over the course of 30, 35 years, then you'll have enough in that cash account where you don't need to have insurance anymore. So that's another, I would say, myth. The other myth is that you need insurance for your whole life. And you really don't. You really only need insurance for as long as you don't have enough money to satisfy your final expenses or whatever your wishes are for when you pass away. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So like, okay. If you have kids, until your kids are like out of college or until a mortgage is paid off or whatever.
Absolutely. And the younger we are, the more expenses we have. We have children, we have mortgages, we have, maybe car payments, it's just everything is much more expensive, childcare. But as you get older, it's called the theory of decreasing responsibility. When you're younger, you need more insurance because you have more expenses and you have more responsibilities. But as you get older, those responsibilities decrease. Now your children are grown. They may already be out of college, mortgage paid off. You don't have a car loan. You're just pretty much paying for basic living expenses. So then you don't really need to have $500,000 in life insurance if you don't choose to.
Got it. So with the whole, I know like what you were saying is that a lot of people think the main benefit is that you can borrow against it. But to your point that it's only a small amount each month or each year that's going into that account. And if you're only getting 1 to 2%, that's why you're saying like someone who's probably better with their money could invest that money or even put into a savings account, is going to get higher than 1 to 2% of a return. So I hear that a lot.
Yeah. So not in a savings account though. So it's not going to get more. Well, it's not going to get more in a savings account because right now savings accounts are getting like 0.0% something. So it's not going to be better there, but it will be better in a mutual fund type of account, which is where they're putting your money anyway. The only difference is they're saying we're going to give you 1 to 2%. But if that fund that they have your money in is earning 20%, then the insurance company is going to get that difference. Got it. You know what I'm saying? So the other thing that I wanted to mention that I failed to mention is that, we mentioned that you can borrow from this cash value. Yes, you can. You can also withdraw from it because at a certain point, some of that money in there, you do truly own it. But the thing about it is if you take a loan from that cash value that you have, you have to pay that back. And if you pay it back, you have to pay it back with interest. And of course you're borrowing your own money that you've been paying, for years for. But then when you pay it back, you have to pay it back to the insurance company with interest. And let's just say that you don't pay it back. So if you don't pay it back, then what happens is when you pass away, they pull that from the death benefit. So then instead of your family getting that whole death benefit amount that you've been paying for all these years, they get that amount less whatever you borrowed when you were living.
Got it. Okay. So,
and yeah. Then there's one last caveat to that. So the last part is, let's say that you never borrow from it, but then you pass away. So they will then go to your beneficiary and they'll say, okay, now, you know, Candace has $100,000 here in life insurance that she's been, you know, paying for a while. And then she also has $40,000 over here in cash. Which one would you like? So of course they're going to say, I want the $100,000. So then the insurance company keeps the other $40,000.
Oh, wow. Okay. Did not
know that. Yeah. So that's the other thing that most people don't know. And there are some, I'm not going to say that this is 100% of whole life policies, because there are some where you can pay a certain amount. It's called a rider, where you can add a rider to your policy to for your beneficiary to receive both. However, that costs so much money that the average person would not even be able to afford it, and it wouldn't make sense.
Got it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were just mentioning in that example, $100,000, how does one determine how much coverage they actually do need in terms of a death benefit?
Well, it's a couple of ways you can figure this out. Number one is just, what are your goals? So it's a few questions that I ask. It is, if someone has a mortgage, do you want your house to be paid off if you were to pass away? If you have children, do you want your children's college education to be paid off with this life insurance if you pass away? Or what is it that you want? What are your wishes for your child or children if something were to happen to you? And then also funeral expenses. How much is the funeral that you imagine for yourself going to cost? So let's just say that that number comes to $250,000. Then there you go. There's that baseline that you can get in terms of insurance. But the other thing that I do is, so I personally offer financial needs analysis for my clients. So when we work together, we'll go through this financial needs analysis. We'll answer all of those questions that I just mentioned, and it'll give us a number and let us know how much insurance you should have. And that's kind of like the way to approach it. It's really, really individual. It's specific, and it's based on each person's needs or wishes.
I imagine that most people probably fall somewhere in like the 100,000 to 500,000. Would that be accurate?
That's accurate.
Okay.
And then some people, you know, if it's like when I run into some of my clients who just don't have anything, I'm like, we got to start somewhere, because at the very least, you know, it would be wonderful if you can leave, you know, some funds behind to really take care of your children or, you know, do certain things. But at the very least, just make sure your family doesn't have the burden of trying to have a funeral.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they can be as low as 30,000, 25,000, it can be as much as a million. But you are right when you say that probably 100,000 to 500,000 is average for a family.
Got it. So what are the factors, as you mentioned, it gets more expensive as you age. What are the factors that go into figuring out that premium? And I know that some people may have, you know, scared away from doing this because they just don't know how much it's going to cost. So can you talk about some of the things that go into that, and maybe some, I know everything's going to be dependent on the person and what their goals are, but maybe as low as the high as you gave an example on premiums.
Mm-hmm. So the factors that they take into consideration when determining if someone is insurable is your age, number one. So of course, I mentioned earlier, the younger you are, the lower that insurance premium is going to be. The older you are, it's going to get higher, because as you get older, the health risks are there. You probably didn't already live the life, so you may not be as healthy. You also are closer to the end of your life expectancy as you get older. So age is one, gender is another. So, you know, for males, it's a little bit more expensive than females. Nothing too crazy, but it is a little bit different. They go by your height and weight. So if you know someone who may be obese, their insurance may be a little bit more than someone who is, you know, not and falls in a certain category. What else? Your past and current health conditions. If you smoke tobacco, so when you smoke tobacco, the premiums are really high. They really tax you for smoking. Not saying you can't be insured, because you can, but they do really issue higher premiums for tobacco use. And then another factor is criminal history and also driving history. So, you know, someone has a bunch of, you know, points, tickets, DUIs, things like that. They may not be insurable, or if they are, their premiums are going to be high. So to give you an example, for a young, I would say, so this is a real quote. So I had a client who is 27 years old. For $30,000 in insurance coverage for 35 years, it's $15.40. And that was for a female. And for someone who is 47 years old, for a 35-year term policy, for someone who's a smoker and a male, it's like $193 a month.
Got it.
So it really ranges, and it really depends on, you know, those factors. But for the most part, someone who's really young, they're going to pay a small premium amount. And then someone who's older and also may have health issues, theirs is going to be higher.
So do they just rely on you to tell them some of this information? Because I've also heard, you know, that you have to do certain medical exams. Is that a thing as well?
So you can get a medical exam. So the numbers that I just quoted you were for someone who doesn't want to get a medical exam. So you're not required to. If you do get a medical exam, then what happens is if it comes, you know, when you are willing to get a medical exam, you get a lower premium. So that's like, you know, it's almost like they incentivize you for being willing to get a medical exam and actually prove that you are, you know, as healthy as you say you are. And then if you're just like, no, I just want insurance and I don't really want to go through the medical exam and things like that, it's still a reasonable cost. It's just a little bit higher than if someone was willing to. But most insurance companies don't require you to get an exam, but they do offer it to you to get either more insurance coverage or a lower premium.
Got it. Now, when someone is considering who to get insurance through, is it something that you should go to like a third party? Is it something you should try to get through a company that you already have insurance through? Like, for example, sometimes I get the mailers for my car insurance that they also do life insurance. What are your thoughts on that?
So first is really going to depend on what type of insurance that you want. And I always recommend that, you know, someone just really either talks to somebody that they trust or talk to somebody that, you know, somebody else has worked with that they trust. Because it's, I mean, it's almost like trying to choose a car insurance company or something, right? You might go on and get a couple of quotes and you're just going to go with the company that gave you the lowest quote. But the thing about it is you have to talk to somebody who's really knowledgeable, because we can all sign up for something. But the thing is, do I even really understand what I'm signing up for? And is this person taking the time to explain it to me? And one thing I can tell you that with most of my clients who had whole life policies, they don't know what they have. They don't even go in there and check and look at it and see what the cash value is. No one really crunches numbers. Nobody told them about some of those things I told you, like, oh, well, if you pull from it, it's going to take from your death benefit amount. They don't talk about that. So you can, you know, possibly go to your auto insurance company. One thing I've noticed with auto insurance companies is they generally only offer whole life insurance. But like I said, it's really going to depend on what you've determined to be the best for your family or your situation is, do you want whole? Do you want term?
Now, when you mentioned term and the two quotes you gave were for 35 years, that part to me is always kind of the crazy part, because it's like betting on how old you're going to be when you die, right? So like, do you think you're going to live past 35 years or not? Because correct me if I'm wrong, if you get a 35-year policy and you live past 35 years, you either have to re-up it or you've just paid those 35 and now there's no death benefit. So at this point, you're just kind of out of luck, right? You have to re-up it or have money to pay for it, like you said.
Exactly. So yes. I mean, it does expire. So that's why when you asked about the pros and the cons, that's what some may see as a con. However, you do have options. And the thing about it is the amount that you're going to pay for that insurance over the course of that 35 years is going to be so much less than what you would have paid for that whole life policy over the course of 35 years.
Yeah.
So if you are paying, you know, so what we do is I'll try to explain the differences, because the one thing that I always say is like my favorite line when it comes to insurance, investments, things like that is numbers don't lie. So if you tell me that I'm paying over the course of, let's just say 35 years, over the course of that time, when I have a whole life policy, I'm going to pay $40,000 for that insurance. But then I have a cash value account that has about, you know, $30,000 in there. It didn't really make sense for me to pay the increased premiums because I don't even have enough cash in there. And this means that now you're really forcing me to carry this for my whole life. But term life is not like that, because you're going to pay a lower premium for the insurance that you have, which is level for 35 years. So if you are paying a premium of $35 a month for 35 years, that's exactly how much you're going to pay. So it's going to be lesser than what you're going to pay with whole life. But the other thing that we want to do is just make sure that you're going to put things in place. You're going to save money, because if you're really trying to, you know, be debt free, or you want to not have to carry life insurance and you want to become self-insured and you want to get rid of that bill, then you can put things in place. Because the only difference between whole life and term life is that whole life bundles your insurance with your cash. Mm-hmm. But when you go term life and just invest your own money, you are not bundled, and then you have both. So if something was to happen to you, let's just say something happened at year 34 of your policy and you had $250,000 in coverage, then your family's going to get the $250,000, and they're also going to get whatever's in that cash account that you have been paying for yourself for 35 years. Mm-hmm. So I just call it taking control of your own finances and not, you know, not just bundling and paying more for something just because it sounds good.
So how do you or what guidance do you give people when they're trying to figure out how long of a term they need? Because, for example, I'm 39 and I'm thinking, OK, 35 years, I'm going to be 74. I hope the Lord blesses me to live past 74. So like now I'm like, well, do they make a 50? Because, you know, 35 doesn't I wouldn't feel comfortable getting 35 just because I hope I'm not dead in 35 years.
So with term insurance, the maximum, I do believe there are some companies that may give you a 40 year. I don't know which ones they are, but 40 would be the maximum. Our maximum for the company that I'm with is 35 years. However, it's like you're also, I mean, you personally, because I know you and I know what I know, you're also disciplined and you're very responsible. So with that being said, it's like if you were to just also have your life insurance for 35 years, and let's just say that you could afford to invest $100 a month or just save $100 a month in this account, then you're going to have $300,000 by the time that 35 years is up.
Yes, I have to be disciplined.
So if you, you know, like, and it's not easy for everybody. So it's not like a set it and forget it type of thing. Mm-hmm. But it's no different than what you would be doing with a whole life policy, if that makes sense. So when you go to the whole life policy, you may be paying $100. You may be paying, let's just say $150 a month. But they're like, you have this insurance, which is going to be so much less than what you would have with a term life policy. But they're going to say you're going to have this insurance, and then a small portion is going to go to your cash. But over the course of 35 years, you're not going to have nowhere near $300,000. So it's more like just thinking about it differently and looking at it from a different perspective. Instead of me bundling, I'm still spending the same amount of money, but instead of me bundling and letting them control my investments and how much money I'm gonna have after, you know, this 35 years, I'll instead pay the same amount, but just have control and be able to grow that, you know, that investment fund much faster.
Yeah, that's so really good.
And that was a real number I gave you just now. So basically, if you save $100 a month for 35 years, and this is based on a 9% rate of return, which is actually quite low because most of them are much higher than that, you'll have $296,000 at the end of that 35 years.
Got it. And that makes sense. Rather than them being able to pocket it, because like you said, they're putting in a mutual fund, you could do the same thing. So mm-hmm. unless you're extremely undisciplined and just can't save and need a bill to be a form of savings, which I'm sure there's some people who need that. So no knock. For most people, I can see why a term life would make more sense and then do what you need to do to invest and get that money up yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So what other factors should people consider when they're purchasing life insurance, whether it's about the company or about the amount of coverage or the type of coverage or kind of the things that people may not think about?
So the other thing that I find that most people just don't know about is that it's very important to be honest when you're applying for life insurance coverage, because tomorrow's not promised for any of us. We don't know when we'll go. And for the first 2 years of a life insurance policy, it doesn't matter what kind, you are in what's called an incontestability period. So that means that if anything happens to you during that first 2 years, if it's deemed to be something that was like a pre-existing condition that you did not disclose on your application, then they don't have to pay out that policy. However, if it's something that you disclose, like let's just say you're like, yeah, I smoke, I'm a smoker, and you pay that higher premium due to that fact, and then something happens, you know, maybe emphysema, lung cancer, something like that, then that policy will pay out because it wasn't anything that you tried to, you know, deceive them on. It was just something, it just so happens that the time came up sooner. So that first 2 years, you're in an incontestability period, which is where they can challenge, you know, the reason for the death and possibly not pay it out. So just be very, very honest on your life insurance applications. And, you know, that's probably one of the biggest things that I want to mention.
So I know, like, when I was going through and looking for coverage and all of that, they asked a million questions and I was not prepared. And so I think that's something I would tell people too about your history, because, you know, I'm 39. I've lived a, you know, decently healthy life. And I didn't think I had that much stuff going on, but I've had surgeries before and different things. And they were asking me like dates, hospital, doctors. I was like, good Lord. So like, I should have did all my research and had all my ducks in a row to be able to give them all this information. Because I started wondering myself, I'm like, I don't know, was that 2010? Was it 2011? Ooh, maybe it was 2012. So like, mm-hmm. it kind of stressed me out because I wasn't prepared that they were going to be so in depth with the questions they were asking me.
Yeah, I mean, as long as the answer is no, you know, like I know on our applications, I feel like it's pretty simple. But as long as if the answer is no, then it can be pretty quickly. But if you're like, do you have high blood pressure or something like that? And you're like, yes. Then they want to know how many medicines do you take? They don't want the specific names of them, but how many medicines do you take? If it's more than three, now we got it. We need your doctor's name, their address, their phone number, and then they're going to request medical records. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't have any health issues, sometimes they still will access your medical information report. And they'll just use that to determine if you're insurable. But before our call today, I mean, before our show today, I actually asked Facebook. I was like, what do you think are some questions that most people want to know about life insurance? So one of the questions, and this was a good one, is who can you take a policy out on? So that's a good question, because you can take a policy out on your parents, your grandparents, your spouse, your you know, like your children's parent, your children's other parent, and your children, stepchildren, grandchildren, and children that you have guardianship of. Who you cannot take a policy out on is a brother or a sister, you know, unless you have legal guardianship or some type of, you know, legal, I don't know, documents or something. You can't take it out on a brother, sister, uncle, aunt. So we say, you know, you can go up and down, but you can't go sideways. Okay. And you can't just take a policy out on a friend, or you can't just take a policy out on a random acquaintance. Like, it has to be an insurable interest. That's what it's called. And that's usually going to be on a direct family member that you would generally be required to take care of if something were to happen, if that makes sense.
Yes. So that's a good one, because I've heard that before. So what are your thoughts on taking a policy out on children? Like, is that something you should do?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Especially if you don't have any money, because there's people, you know, even for our children, you know, they're not exempt from tomorrow not being promised. So there are a lot of parents that just don't have any money and can't afford to pay for a funeral. So now if you don't have any type of coverage on your children, then you have to find, get donations, ask family members. So they need coverage too. And usually with most policies, there is what's called a child rider. So I know with ours, it's a child rider and it's so inexpensive. Like it's literally like $6 for $10,000 in insurance for all of your kids. So if you have 10 children, $10,000 each in coverage is $6.18 a month.
Got it.
Yeah. And some policies are a little different though. Some companies don't put the whole family on one policy. You may find some families paying 2 and 3 premiums a month for each individual person because maybe it's this much for this child and then it's this much for this age child and then the spouse is this much. And then so I just like when it's all in one and I could just pay for everyone's coverage with one bill each month.
So this may seem like a crazy question, but does the person you're getting a policy out on have to know you have a policy on them? Like if you wanted to get one on your parents or grandparents, like, is there a way for you to do it without them knowing? Because, you know, some people may feel some type of way or be like, why are you doing this?
Well, yes. I mean, if I'm being honest there, you know, you can get an insurance policy on anyone. And I mean, on, you know, those people you're allowed to get it on. And some people don't know or they don't tell the person, but depending on the agent that you're working with, it's really important that, you know, they try to get some type of consent or, you know, they try to make sure that this person does know that somebody's taking out a policy. But to answer your question, there are many times that people get policies and the other person may not know.
Is there an age at which you're like, oh no, you're just too old to get a policy? Or would you say like, no matter how old you are, like I'm just thinking my grandmother, you know, she's in her 80s, like someone who's 80, would you be like, you should still get one, even though obviously the premium would be much higher since she is older?
So for her being 80, I'm not sure that she can get one. Okay. I know with term life, she wouldn't be able to because the maximum age is 70. And even at 70, it would only be a 10-year policy. So it would take her to the age she's older than, you know, the maximum age she would be. So with term life, no, the maximum age is 70. With whole life, I'm honestly not sure what that age range is, or that maximum is. But one thing I do know about whole life is, although they say whole life, this is another thing I meant to mention. I'm glad you said that, because the other thing about whole life is they say your whole life, but it actually expires at 100.
Damn.
So, yeah. So imagine paying for a policy for 80 years and then you actually outlive that policy and you turn 101 and it's like, oh my God, I'm not covered anymore.
Yeah.
So, although, you know, for the average person that's whole life, you know, but yeah, 70 for term life. And I don't know for sure for whole life, but I think that, you know, 80 would probably be too old to get a new policy. And if it is, it's going to be, like you said, extremely expensive, like so expensive that it's probably just makes sense to put that money in an investment account for a couple of years. It'll grow faster and it'll make more sense.
Got it. Now, are there things like, you know, on the movies and such where you see like where there's things that life insurance won't pay for? Like, I don't know if this is a real thing that like suicide, for example, if someone commits suicide, that their life insurance is null and void. Is that a true statement or is that just something on the movies?
No, it is true for some companies. I know with my company, we cover everything. When I say everything, I mean, suicide, accidents, war, terrorism, things like that. Now, back when 9/11 happened, it was actually a devastating time for more reasons than one, because at that time, a lot of the insurance companies did not, they had this clause in there that said, if you died for those reasons, we said suicide, war, acts of terrorism, that policy didn't pay out. And of course, that was an act of terrorism.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of people that lost family members and didn't get any insurance payouts, like a lot.
That's
because
crazy.
Of that reason. I know. Yep. So with our policies, we do definitely cover all of those things. But like I said, in that first 2 years, if that were to happen, I don't know. Not that part, but maybe suicide in that first 2 years, they may contest that.
Mm-hmm. So for the people listening and the, you know, who have been inspired or motivated and they're like, you know what, I'm going to get off the couch and I'm going to get me some insurance because I don't want to be a burden on nobody. What should they do? Like, what are the steps they should take? Like, do they need to just start shopping around online? Like you said, kind of get referrals, or where would you tell someone to start?
Well, I'm big on education. So I definitely feel like it's something that, you know, if someone is able to digest the information and really understand what they're reading, to just go ahead and Google, like get some information about the differences like we just talked about. But also, I mean, call me. I don't know. Reach out to me, you know, DM me. I don't know. Like I just, that's what I'm here for. And the one thing that I can say just even about myself as a life insurance agent is I'm going to be completely honest with you. I'm going to make sure that you have what you need to at least satisfy your goals. And I'm also just going to just educate you because it starts there. And I think that's why, you know, we're having this conversation because we feel like there's a need to educate the community on these very important topics. So it all starts with education. And then from there, really just, it really goes into just making a decision that makes sense for your family and your lifestyle.
Got it. So how can the listeners reach you? Do you want to plug either like your social media or give your email, whatever you feel comfortable with?
Yeah, absolutely. So I can be reached by phone, text. I'm kind of old school there. Like if you want to pick up the phone and call or text me, I can be reached at 302-285-9942. If you want to email me, my email address is financialpowerconsulting@gmail.com. If you want to reach me on Instagram or Facebook, it's at Financial Power Consulting. And, you know, again, my name is Candace Russell, and I am just here to help anyone that has any questions, even if it's a question. You don't have to be calling me to necessarily sign up for a policy that day. But if there's any questions that you have, I would really like to answer them for you. Even if it's someone, somebody told me this or somebody told me that, let's talk about it so we can kind of, you know, dissect it and just get to the bottom of it. So that's the best way that you can reach me or contact me.
All right. Well, I appreciate you sharing that information and all of this information, because like you said, like education, knowledge is power. We're coming at the end of 2021. We're all going to have these resolutions on how we're going to be a better person. I'm going to be slimmer and wealthier, and I'm going to make decisions in 2022. So I'm sure everyone out there, and this is really one way to set yourself up for success. So I encourage anyone listening today, if you don't have life insurance outside of your job, that you really consider it. And like Candace was mentioning, even if it's just going online to Google it, give her a call, talk to someone, especially if you have children or anyone who is depending on you. You really want to leave them in a good situation and not in a bad situation. We know life is not promised. If anything has taught us that, this past year and a half has. So I really encourage my listeners to take the opportunity to get to know more and hopefully set themselves up for success going into 2022. So
yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I couldn't have said it better.
any closing remarks on your side or anything you want to mention?
Yeah, just in closing, I just want to say thank you so much for having me on your show and just being able to talk to your listeners about this very important topic. I don't think that anyone should shy away from it. It's not something that means that if you put something in a place that you're counting your years or you're saying that you're going to die or anything like that. But what it is just preparing. It's preparing because, you know, people do not plan to fail. We just fail to plan. So if you just put a plan in place and just really, really stick to it and keep your family in mind, keep your loved ones in mind, then, you know, you'll be doing everyone such a great service. So thanks again, Jen. I really appreciate the time and the opportunity.
No, you are very welcome. Maybe we'll invite you back on since you are a woman that wears many, many, many hats. Like you mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, you have a lot of experience and knowledge on a lot of different topics. So I hope people reach out to you. As I always like to say when I'm closing out my podcast, let's be someone's reason to smile today. Thank you guys for listening.